Abortion rights remain intact here in Washington state, despite last week's Supreme Court ruling striking down long existing federal protections. But abortion providers in Washington are still concerned about the possible fallout from that decision. Dr. Monica R. McLemore is a renowned nurse scientist who recently joined the UW School of Nursing. And Dr. Megan Egan-Turco is the director of nursing at the UW Bothell School of Nursing and Health Studies, and she's also a practicing midwife. KUOW's Angela King spoke with them about the broader implications for healthcare providers and their patients, wherever they may be. We hear first from Dr. Megan Egan-Turco.
So one of the largest concerns that I have about healthcare going forward is what this is going to mean for people seeking care that is not specifically abortion related. In particular, what's going to happen to people who present to an emergency room or who present to their provider who are having a complicated miscarriage, for example, that requires treatment, including aspirating their uterus? Are they going to be able to access that? Or is their access to that going to be limited by either the actual legal culpability of their provider or the fear of their provider that doing so will limit their ability to practice in a particular setting?
So, Megan, do you get the sense that the justices really understood how this ruling would go beyond the core issue of abortion?
No, they understood none of how it would go beyond the core issue of abortion or how abortion fits into healthcare.
Monica, your take on that?
Yeah, I completely agree. First of all, thank you for the discussion. I completely agree with what Megan has said. But one other point I actually really want to make is, what happens to the people who, you know, had appointments before this ruling, and now where do they go for their care, right? So if you had multiple day appointments, we have a waiting period around when you consent for your abortion. Let's say that happened 2 days ago, and now we have this ruling. Well, where are you supposed to go? Especially if you either initiated abortion by taking medications or you began your process using dilators and such. Like, where are you supposed to go now that you know, the protections of Roe are gone? The second piece I would add to that is this notion of our healthcare workforce and the people who actually are doing abortion-related work. These people still have to call patients. They still have to get people rescheduled. They still have to get people to care, but they have no job. So I don't want us to just lose sight of the fact that this has huge, drastic implications for people seeking abortion care and where are they supposed to go now that they've started their process. But then also, what about the workforce? Are they expected to be able to work without pay? Are they working, you know, in a legally precarious situation? Because now what they did yesterday was completely legal. And now in those states that have automatic trigger laws, it's not.
Well, we're going to talk about that in just a bit, Monica. But I wanted to dig into some of the work that you do. Specifically, your research shines the light on inequities within our healthcare system, especially for Black communities, Indigenous communities, and people of color in general. Those communities will almost certainly feel a disproportionate impact from this ruling.
Absolutely. And quite frankly, we know that Black people are overrepresented in people who are seeking abortions. And there's a whole variety of structural racism reasons why that's true. And so we already know that people who are already most burdened with health inequities and disparities, and quite frankly, have to struggle with structural racism in the context of healthcare, are going to be most impacted by this decision to place an additional burden on people who are already greatly burdened. And I would also like to remind the listeners, we're still in the context of COVID. I think health inequities are actually going to be widened and exacerbated because of these restrictions in care. When you layer on top of that an already existing maternal health crisis in terms of maternal morbidity and mortality for pregnant people who want to remain pregnant and carry pregnancies to term, it is just, I think, you know, again, a cruel and uninformed decision that is going to have long-term impacts for Black, Indigenous, and other people of color.
One of the realities of this decision is that it ignores how people interact with the healthcare system, how the healthcare system interacts with them. My concerns as a midwife are that people can access care that they need when they need to access it and that it is appropriate care. And this decision does absolutely nothing to improve that.
So any other concerns you might have that people may not immediately think of as we deal with this new reality?
One of the things that is concerning for me is whether some forms of contraception will be relabeled as abortifacients. and considered to be banned under some of the new laws that are coming out. If conception or pregnancy is defined as fertilization of an ovum, there are a number of contraceptive methods, including some of the IUDs, including really most hormonal methods, where you cannot guarantee that there's going to be interruption of ovulation. So that interruption of implantation of a fertilized egg may in fact be the way that the contraception is working. And I am very concerned that this decision really opens the door to banning some of our most effective methods of contraception.
All right. Well, let's talk more about the effects this ruling will have on providers, which could include laws that hold them legally responsible for abortion services. We've seen this in Texas already. Megan, how do you think this ruling will affect how healthcare providers, even those who do not provide abortion-related care?
This creates a situation in which providers are potentially being required to act as law enforcement with our patients, which is both unethical and totally inappropriate. And what this decision is essentially translating into is there's going to be a breach of trust. There's going to be a lack of honesty because people will not feel safe disclosing information to their providers. And that's going to translate into worse healthcare outcomes.
You know, it is really hard, you know, to think about this notion that I have to somehow interpret myself as a further arm of or an agent of the state, mm-hmm. especially when federal ethics guidelines from the American Nurses Association, from the American Medical Association are in direct conflict with this ruling. It is not the job of healthcare providers to call police on our patients or to, you know, notify authorities when we suspect that they either have had a miscarriage, have had an abortion. Like, this is completely in conflict with our code of ethics. So reminder number one. Number two also is our state boards of nursing and our state boards of medicine need to be very, very clear around the protections for providers that are aligned with our national ethics standards, because I am very, very concerned that people will leave the profession and will continue or will to discontinue providing comprehensive reproductive health services out of fear. And I find that to be completely offensive. And quite frankly, I think it is unacceptable. And we need some, you know, civil disobedience for clinicians like us who know that it violates our national standards from our professional organization specific to the ethics of practice and serving the public.
I think that it's really important to remember that there are not people who have abortions and people who have babies. There are just people. And whether someone thinks that they may at some point need to have an abortion or want to have an abortion is irrelevant to what actually happens. We provide healthcare. And what these laws do is they make it difficult or impossible for me to do my job, which is to provide healthcare that people need when they need it. And there isn't any way to sugarcoat that reality. People are not going to get the care that they need in these states.
And the last thing I would say is, you know, the estimated rates of abortion have been dropping since, you know, we've been keeping statistics, and specifically over the last decade, we've seen, you know, an estimated 800,000 abortions in the United States. And that's widely thought to be an underestimate. And these are data that are reported to the Guttmacher Institute, as well as the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. That, however, still is a very large number of pregnancies that, if they all continued, would need to come into our existing pregnancy services and healthcare, where we have an estimated 4 million births per year in the United States. And we already have an existing maternal morbidity and mortality crisis where we can't even keep people alive who want to be pregnant, where their outcome is a birth. We need the creativity of nursing, medicine, social work, public health, healthcare, policymakers, funders, to really think about how we can reimagine and rebuild our healthcare infrastructure to be able to provide optimal services and outcomes for pregnant capable people.
Dr. Monica R. McLemore and Dr. Megan Egan-Torco, thank you for your time.
Thank you for having us.